73. The Luxury of Simplicity. 16 years ago. Zeth lunged, his practice sword scraping along the back edge of his foe's. Sliding inside the man's defenses, Zeth shoved him away, then slammed his weapon into the side of his foe's neck. The padded leather prevented injury, but both men halted, Zeth's blade resting there. "Third point," a quiet voice said from the darker edges of the chamber. "Match to Zeth son Noturo." Silence. His opponent reached up and pulled off the practice mask, soulcast mesh stiff across the face and with sides of some strange reflective white material that was light yet strong enough to withstand a sword's blow. Gondasun Darius wiped streaming sweat from his face, then nodded to Zeth before turning and walking to rack his equipment. Further silence. Though 20 acolytes watched and 3 full shamans, no one spoke. Gonda was the monastery swordmaster, favored to someday hold the honor blade. He had not landed a touch on Zeth in all 5 of their bouts today. Zeth slowly removed his mask, bathing his sweaty face in cool air. Gonda did not seem angry at Zeth. Those of this monastery were indeed of a different breed than the petty soldiers of the camp Zeth had left. Less open resentment, less brutality, but more strange politics behind the scenes. Gonda's practice sword fell from the rack as he placed it. He left it lying and pushed out of the training hall, footsteps loud in the silence, like raindrops on a rooftop. Zeth carefully racked his own equipment, feeling the eyes of the other acolytes on him. 2 years here had been good for him. In the camp, he'd rarely been challenged. When he'd arrived here, it had taken him weeks to land a single point on any of his companions. A strong current made for stronger fish. Zeth quietly pulled off his gambeson and handed it to the older acolyte in charge of cleaning equipment today. In Posen's monastery, the more hits you took during training, the more chores you did. It had been over a year since Zeth had been assigned such duties. It had been longer than that since he'd cried himself to sleep, missing his mother. All was right again. Here he didn't need to think. He could merely train. He liked how simple his life was at last. Even the behind-the-scenes politics didn't matter, not so long as you were good with a sword. As he'd just proven, he was very good. Posen himself emerged from behind one of the pillars. Like the others in the room, Zeth bowed. He hadn't realized the honor-bearer was watching.
"And so, Zeth," the older man said, "you take the rank of swordmaster for yourself."
Zeth did not reply. It was true.
"I am impressed with everything about you," Posen said, "save your weakness with else calling. It is a troubling shortcoming, Zeth."
Also true. He'd practiced with the blade, as for the defense of truth, for the preparation their people must make in the event of the Voidbringer's return. Each monastery needed multiple trained surge binders in case the honor-bearer fell in battle.
"I have prepared a hunt for you," Posen said. "The first clue is to be found atop the 7th spire. Go."
Zeth had worried he would need to retire to his rooms now that he'd won his title. That would have meant thinking, musing over his accomplishment. Another task handed to him so quickly was a relief. He started on it immediately. The 7th spire was a riddle. Fortunately, he knew a tavern outside the monastery in Mockdown, the small city that filled the island here between rivers. The tavern was called First Spire. He assumed that the 7th would be the 7th building on the street. Unfortunately, he found nothing atop that building. He stood on the roof, arms folded, the confused homeowner holding the ladder below. He did another search of the rooftop for anything crystalline. Posen liked to soulcast things into crystal. Nothing. Finally, Zeth climbed down the ladder. It was wood, of course, as were the logs that made up the boardwalk. There were clay bricks here and there, imitating stone, but not wholly. It was ingenious how the people of this region learned to lock wooden pieces together into joints without using nails. It made the wattle and daub structures or sod houses of his own home region look decidedly primitive by comparison. Which was what made it all the more odd when these people used metal hinges on their doors. Zeth thanked the homeowner, a portly man with a deferential way of speaking. He wore a splash, but over here they did that by sewing patches onto their clothing. In this case, red on the knees. How was it they didn't know the proper way of things? Posen had ordered him to stop talking about it, but if Zeth were the one who was in the wrong, he would want someone to tell him. After being dismissed, the man opened the door to his home, despite the steel hinges. If the door broke, he'd need to call an acolyte or a retired soldier, many lived in this town, to fix it. In fact, there were a great number of carpenters, smiths, and other tradesfolk who were men or women that had once been soldiers or acolytes and had retired after only a year or two. It felt like they had chosen that life just to quit, so they could be employed in such professions. Soulcast metal was reserved for tools that needed to be handled. The hinges came from mines, and everyone used them. So maybe these people didn't care about wearing their splashes wrong. 2 years here, and Zeth still tied his mind in knots pondering these things, when in reality, he needed to focus on the riddle.
Goodman, Zeth called. The man peeked back out his door. What do you think of when I say the Seventh Spire?
The Seventh Spire? The man asked. Well,
no, Zeth began, then stopped. The Seven's Spire?
The Seven was a street. Could he have misheard? It wouldn't be the first time, as Posen spoke with a slight northern accent.
Of course, the Seven.
Acolyte?
The homeowner asked.
Never mind, Zeth said, turning on his heel. Thank you for your aid.
He started off, wooden paving logs firm underfoot. It really was remarkable, this wood of the Makam tree. Light, strong. It made for an interesting city, which Zeth tried not to hate. Indeed, his father had made great improvements here after being elected mayor last year, moving from city finance minister, an appointed position. Under Naturo's direction, old paving logs had been replaced with new ones, the bridges repaired. Social reforms had been instituted, encouraging the loggers to be less rowdy. Better working hours, more frequent rotations for leave. Naturo didn't seem bothered by what it had cost to get here, so Zeth tried not to be. Instead, he enjoyed the whitewashed buildings, the way people nodded in respect to an acolyte, the colors in patches on the clothing. It didn't smell too bad. Not like the towns back home where horse dung had covered the streets and sewage had been dumped in the river. Mockdown was, if not fresh, at least bearable. Plus, he was the best of the acolytes and had satisfying workouts each day. Surely the pain that Mother wasn't here with them, and that he went weeks, sometimes months, without seeing Elid, who liked to travel, would fade further. His old life was supposed to have been burned away. The embers would die soon. The Seven's tallest building was a church to issue the Herald. It had once been dedicated to Batla, but sometime in the past that had changed. The people of Shinovar revered the Heralds almost as much as the sun, moons, and mountains, who were the greatest of Spren. But Ishu was extra special for having brought them to this land by listening for the songs of a new world. Atop this building, Zeth found a crystal patch of shingles. Riddle solved. Underneath it was a small slip of paper that held the next clue. The Eastern Wind. Zeth climbed back down the side of the church.
Sorry, he said to the stone shaman, peeking out the window near the statue Zeth was using for handholds. It's fine, acolyte, she replied. I do wish he'd warn us when he sends people on these hunts. We were holding services.
Zeth bowed to her, then started along the street.
Acolyte,
the shaman said. When he glanced at her, she nodded to the side. He followed the gesture to where someone lounged near the front of the building. A tall woman in colorful shaman robes, older than Zeth by a decade, with that short haircut he still found flagrant. Sivvy visited the city so often one could mistakenly assume she was the local honor-bearer. Were the Willshaper acolytes that disciplined so as to pay no heed when their leader left? He'd heard the opposite. They said the Willshaper acolytes drank and went out riding and barely trained at all. He found that kind of frivolity implausible in Sivvy. After all, he liked her. Zeth, she said, strolling over.
Honor bearer, he said, bowing. I'm sorry I cannot stop to speak with you long. I have been set an urgent task by...
Sivvy held out a handful of small pieces of paper, identical to the one Zeth already had.
Posen always uses the same places. I swear I remember my predecessor mentioning the crystal shingles when she was an acolyte.
Zeth gaped at the proffered handful of clues.
I can't take those. I need to find my own way to...
I believe your instructions were to return with the papers, she said. There was no prohibition against someone handing them to you.
It was true, so Zeth accepted the papers.
Come and speak with me, Zeth, she said, heading toward a nearby tavern. I'd like to hear of your training.
He sighed, but could not refuse an honor-bearer. Besides, Sivvy did often have a perspective to share. He tried not to assume he was the reason for her frequent visits, but he couldn't put out of his mind things he'd overheard about Posen's plans for him. At a quiet booth in the tavern, it was only 3 in the afternoon, he got tea while she sipped something he pretended was barley water, both free as this was a monastery town.
I heard, she said, that you made swordmaster today.
That news spread already?
He asked, waiting out of respect to sip his tea until she drank first.
Gonda is good, she said. No one expected someone better to come along.
She eyed him. He looked down into his tea.
You know, don't you? She asked.
I've overheard things I should not have.
Posen's not shy about his aspirations for you, Zeth,
Sivvy replied.
He's been cultivating you for this role for years, since even before you were an acolyte.
I recognize the need, Zeth said, forcing the words out, for the best soldiers to hold the honor blades. That is truth. To prepare for the coming of the enemy.
Then why do you seem ashamed?
He looked down and did not reply. Sivvy sighed, then tapped the tabletop with one finger.
Zeth. Do you know why Posen sends you on these silly little hunts?
I do not ask, and he offers no explanation.
It's because he wants to test your obedience. Posen wants acolytes who are quick to obey, slow to question.
That sounds like an admirable quality in a religious acolyte.
And in a colleague?
There it was. She said it openly.
You're so quick to do as you're told, Zeth, Sivvy said.
Why? It's not what you think, he said, blushing.
And what do I think?
That I'm stupid, Zeth said. I obey for the opposite reason. If I don't move quickly, I start wondering. I start asking. I have an unruly mind, Honor Nimi.
Tell me, she said, leaning forward, the questions you ask, Zeth.
Dared he say it? Was this a test to see if he obeyed her or if he was self-contradictory? They played so many games. Perhaps that was why he secretly hated this city, because here, at last, he'd learned that even honor-bearers saw things differently from one another.
Posen is not the best swordsman, Zeth said, watching the dark shifting colors swirl in the tea, leaking from the pouch.
Not anymore. He's almost 60, yet no one challenges him.
He is wise, she said. Being the best soldier is not always about being quickest with a weapon. Experience is valuable, even after the body starts to slow.
He could still offer wisdom while someone else bore the blade.
If a genuine threat came, she replied, he'd let one of his acolytes bear the honor when going into battle. Why do you think we train you all so well with the weapon?
This is reasonable, Zeth said. But if an aging honor-bearer isn't that dire a problem, why is everyone, including you and Posen, this eager for me to begin a pilgrimage?
She smiled, then finally tipped her head back and took a long drink. When she set the cup back down, she met his eyes.
The Windrunner is a problem. Honor-bearer, Zeth searched for the name. Tuco San Tuco?
Correct. You paid attention in lessons.
Of course I did, Zeth said, frowning. Why would there be lessons if one is not to pay attention?
Oh, Zeth.
He started into his drink, savoring the bitter taste.
Are you going to ask what the problem with Tuco is?
Is it my place to ask?
Well, I did leave that door wide open.
Is he a problem to truth? Zeth asked, and for the defense of our lands?
Yes.
Then that is enough.
He met her eyes.
I haven't heard the voice in a while.
He's been busy.
And if I'm an honor-bearer, Zeth said, will I get to know what he is, what is actually going on?
If you want to know.
Did he? Zeth settled back on the hard bench of their booth, looking out the window at the passing people. Posen had said that Mockdown wasn't large by most standards. Zeth found it hard to imagine more people moving through the streets without carriages and wagons crushing people or causing chaos. None of the people outside knew about the voice. None of them cared that they didn't know. He could be like them. But
after I destroyed the invaders, Zeth said, Posen was ready to completely abandon me. All of you were. Then the moment you knew I'd heard the voice, you welcomed me.
The context changed, she said. One moment you were a rogue agent acting against the interests of his farmer. The next, you were a servant of a greater power.
Actions should be right or they should be wrong. That's what I was taught.
When you were a child, she said, you were taught what a child can understand. Why does nuance terrify you, Zeth?
Because, he whispered, I can't predict it.
It's been 10 years, she said, since a boy found a rock in the soil and couldn't understand why anyone would see the situation differently from him. Don't you think you should have grown a little since then?
He looked up from his tea.
Wait, she...
Your father and I talk, she said.
She looked wistful as she said it, a hint of a smile on her lips. For once, he caught the nuance.
You don't keep visiting the city because of me, he said, horrified. Not only for me.
She shrugged.
My father is a heretic. You're a holy woman.
She snorted in amusement, nearly spitting out her beer.
He's hardly a heretic, and I'm merely halfway holy, Zeth. Your father is a man of strong faith, just not in things that don't matter. You should ask him sometime.
Those kinds of conversations never went as Zeth wanted.
Will you do it? She asked. Will you go on pilgrimage, in preparation to challenge the Windrunner for his blade?
Pilgrimage. He would need to visit each monastery and train in all the surges. Then he would have to defeat the Windrunner in a duel without powers. That wouldn't have to be deadly. It depended on whether Tuco would surrender the blade willingly or not. But the Windrunner did not seem the type, from what Zeth had heard, to give up the blade willingly. He was young to be an honor-bearer, and reportedly very skilled. After winning the blade, if he succeeded in that, Zeth would have to go on a pilgrimage to the monasteries again and present himself to the honor-bearers, proving to their satisfaction that he was worthy. lest they as a group renounce and condemn what he'd done, returning the blade to the previous honor-bearer if he lived, or finding a replacement if he didn't. It could take years, a decade, longer.
"Zeth," she asked, "will you do what we ask?"
"How can I trust that it's right to listen to you?" Zeth said, throwing his hands in the air. "If nuance changes what is right and wrong for you on a whim."
He sat back in his seat, puffing. Then he groaned softly.
"That did sound childish, didn't it?"
When he said that, Sibby relaxed visibly and took a long pull on her drink.
"It's that satisfying to you," Zeth said, "to see me frustrated?"
She held up a finger, still drinking. She downed the entire thing.
"Storms."
"It's satisfying," she said, wiping her lip, "to know I was correct. There is something in you that is willing to self-reflect. Why do you find it so hard, Zeth?"
"I just want things to be easy," he said, "like they were when I was young."
"That's laziness."
She pointed at him, leaning forward across the table. She did that a lot. Such passion. Had he ever felt that passionate about anything?
"Yes," he thought, "about finding answers."
"Listen," Sibby said, "life was never easy when you were young, Zeth. You were merely allowed to pretend that it was. Other people were always out there making these kinds of choices. But just because your life gave you the luxury of simplicity doesn't mean the world was magically less complex," she said. "Tell me, aren't you glad you got to escape your childish notions and see the world as it really is?"
"I glad for all of this?"
That was uncomfortably close to what he'd been thinking earlier, that he'd want to be informed if he were wearing splashes wrong. Huh. He considered that as Sibby ordered another drink from the barmaid, who hovered barely far enough away to be discreet. If he was wrong about religion, wouldn't he want to know? Yes. Yes, he would. And wouldn't he be glad to have been corrected? In a moment of deep reflection, he realized his errors. It wasn't their fault for using nuance, it was his for not wanting to see it.
"I'll do it," he said. "I'll go on the pilgrimage. If you took me in first to train with your blade, I'd like that. Let me fulfill my final requirements as an acolyte here so that I might be elevated to warrior elite."
He would of course choose that path rather than becoming a ministering shaman, the other option for an acolyte.
"Excellent," she said.
"What would you have done," he said, "if I hadn't been willing to accept your advice?"
"Wouldn't be the first time," she said with a sigh.
Then, to his questioning gaze, she continued,
"Three of the other current honor-bearers trained with Posen. He has a sixth sense for finding talented warriors. But he has also proven himself quite skilled at finding people who will jump when he commands. It almost makes one think he wants servants more than colleagues."
She nodded to him, standing and taking her beer from the tray as it arrived.
"I've got someone else to visit. See you at my monastery in a few months."
Zeth tried not to think about who she was seeing. Before she left, though, she stepped back and leaned down by him.
"Posen is using you. Remember that."
"And you," Zeth asked, "are you using me?"
She winked at him.
"I'm not doing this because you want me to," he said, "or because he does. I'm doing it for answers. I will know what the voice is."
"We're all counting on it, Zeth," she said,
then left, taking her cup with her. Zeth made sure to pay for it before he left. Free drinks were one thing, but they shouldn't be exploiting the tavern by taking their cups.